broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Oh, I can tell you that was Cheryl Cook, the deputy undersecretary.
So at this time, she'll be remanded to serve her sentence.
And I'm not giving you my house, and you can rot unless you crawl.
They were
back.
Not allowed to go to Cuba under the federal regulation.
You ever smoke, Wolf?
No, not really.
F you.
Famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and every second is just a frolic in the park here. I'll tell you, good show tonight as we talk with Father James McQuarters about a Roman Catholic priest in Waterbury, Connecticut. This might have been a story you didn't hear about, but it's a fascinating story nonetheless. This is not a story of a so-called molesting priest. This is not a story of a priest that is engaged in that kind of despicable and evil behavior. But it is a story of a priest, a Roman Catholic priest by the name of Kevin Gray, who has been accused by police of stealing funds, over $1 million of funds from this particular parish, so that he could indulge himself in a lifestyle of hotel rooms, restaurants, clothing, male escorts, and a variety of other personal expenses. According to police, they say this man racked up $200,000 on various Manhattan restaurants alone. So we'll talk with James McQuarters, Father James McQuarters, in a moment about that. Coming up, the Lindsay Lohan, Wesley Snipes, and the $35,000 settlement with a young lesbian in the Southeast. We'll be talking with Emery Clayton on our show later on, Professor Emery Clayton from L.A. Canyon College. And you're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. You can watch streaming video of the show right now if you want. At PhilHendryShow.com. That's PhilHendryShow.com. You can also listen to live streaming audio because it's on the video, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't watch the video, there's going to be audio on there, too. A lot of people want to know about that.
Yeah, that's great. So, in other words, if you're looking at the video, there's sound?
Yeah.
Okay, so there you go. And then you can, you know, tomorrow you can download the video if download the audio if you want, watch a 5-day archive of the video. And every single day we are including more and more and more and more archival material. Today I think we just loaded in November 2004. We're making all of our archival stuff downloadable. It's an incredible undertaking, and I think we're the only radio show in history to do it to this extent. So join us over there. Get a backstage pass at philhendryshow.com. 877-876-PHIL. So later on, stories, not only Lindsay Lohan and Wesley Snipes, but this a former employee of the USDA charade and statements that she made that were alleged to be racist. We're going to talk with Professor Emery Clayton later on about that. But right now, I want to bring on Father James McQuarters from Belmar Academy. He is one of the guidance counselors there at Belmar Academy and is the head of the rectory there of the diocese priests. And Father McQuarters, thanks for joining us. Did you read this story?
I only had a very brief opportunity, Phil, to read the story of what I did and to try to familiarize myself with this story in Connecticut of this priest that you're talking about.
Father Gray?
Yes, indeed.
All right, the 64-year-old Roman Catholic priest has been arrested after an investigation into the theft of church money. He stands accused of stealing funds in order to support some very unpriestly habits. That's the CBS editorial comment there.
Yes.
Kevin Gray turned himself into Waterbury police this morning, Tuesday morning. On July the 6th.
Yeah, this was a story that this event took place, I believe, in June, when the police began the investigation.
All right, so on June the 6th, the man was arrested.
That's correct.
After learning of a warrant, he turned himself in after learning of a warrant for his arrest on larceny charges. The former pastor of a Waterbury church is accused of stealing $1.3 million over the course of 7 years and using the money to pay for personal expenses, including hotel rooms, restaurants, clothing, and male escorts. Cops say that Gray racked up $200,000 on various Manhattan restaurants, $100,000 on hotels, $80,000 on clothing and designer suits, wow, and $45,000 on rent and tuition for two men that I guess he was involved with. When questioned as to why, police say Gray told them that, quote, he felt the church owed it to him because he was unhappy with his church assignments. As a result of this controversy, officials say Gray was suspended last month by the Archdiocese of Hartford, and he can no longer function as a priest in Connecticut or anywhere in the county. Prior to the scandal and investigation, Gray served as the priest at Sacred Heart from January 1, 2003 through the 15th of April of this year, according to local television station WFSB. I wanted to ask you, Father McQuarters, what possible need would a priest have for designer suits?
Well, I don't know. We do an awful lot of work in the community where we're not always wearing. I think people think that we wear our vestments as part of a daily uniform of some kind, but that's not the case. And oftentimes we'll visit homes or business. We'll be involved in a normal affair, a normal function of the community, dressed in street clothing, if you wish, or in suits. I suppose if he had this kind of money at his disposal, that he had decided that he would indulge in this kind of expensive theft, really, is what we're talking about. And
so this is out-and-out thievery. Let me ask you about the comment. He said he felt the church owed it to him. What do you think of that?
Well, I want to preface my remarks, Phil, because I think that people, first of all, should understand that I, in no way do I countenance what Father Gray did. And to steal is not only against the Holy Commandment, but it's a violation of your neighbor, and certainly a violation of the community that we live in, the trust that we put in each other, so that we can be safe and secure in our homes and with our family. And for a Roman Catholic priest, or Catholic priest, who is a citizen of an officer of the church, to do this. But he said he felt the church owed it to him. I read those words, and I'll tell you, I felt a bit of sympathy.
And you felt, you say sympathy?
I felt a bit of sympathy, I did. Because I know exactly, I don't think there's a priest out there that when he hears the words of a priest saying, the church owed me, that he doesn't say to himself, I know exactly what he's talking about. And that, of course, is the sacrament of reconciliation, what we used to call confession. And the stress that puts on you, the emotional stress it puts on you.
All right, before you go on, people need to understand the sacrament of confession or reconciliations when a Catholic goes into a confessional booth and confesses their sins to the priest.
That is correct.
And recently, or not recently, but it changed. The term was called confession when I was a kid, and now it's reconciliation.
That's part of an ecumenical, yes, and encyclical from Rome. These are very private, and these are very serious commitments and a very serious sacrament. And to sit in a confessional as a Roman Catholic priest and to hear these sins, and you are subjected, and I'm not judging, understand, Phil, but because this is the part of the vocation, but to be subjected each day to the most vile and despicable things.
Now, are you judging, as a priest, are you judging people when they confess to you?
As a priest, I'm not. And I'm judging in terms of the Holy Word of God. And that would be God's law. And I'm assigning or assessing a penance. But as a man, of course I'm sickened. And I'm revolted by what I hear.
And now, you see, you're sickened and revolted when you hear people who come into the confessional, are they telling you illegal things?
I can't get into the characterization of these things. I can tell you that some are, some are not. This is part of the confessional. That's part of the confidence that we keep. But for 30 years or 40 years, you wake up in the morning and you leave the rectory, you leave the residence, and you go to the church, and you go into the confessional, and you begin to hear the morning confession, and you started the day feeling as if this was going to be a good day, and what you're met with are the most hideous acts, and the most sickening, and most disgusting things that you've ever heard in your life. And I would never break the confidence at the confessional to tell you what these things are. But I can tell you I've heard things that make me sick to my stomach, not only physically, but sick in my soul. And I can understand a priest who eventually says himself, day in and day out, I'm listening to a hellish litany of horrors. And I think I've had about enough of this. And I think I'm going to give myself a good time or something, you know.
And so do you feel that this is what Father Gray went through?
I'm almost sure. I'm almost sure of it, yeah.
So this Father Gray, who you say for however many years, he was 64 years of age, I guess that's 40-plus years, huh?
I would imagine, yes. I would imagine, yes. He leave the seminary at the age of 40 years. 40 years, yes.
All right. And this Father Gray, after hearing the confessions of thousands and thousands and thousands of confessions of people, and plus, I guess, all the other things, right?
Well, the other duties of a priest, the other duties of a spiritual flock, and to advise and to counsel, and to be there for a family, and to be a part of the parishional family, this is a joyous thing. And I can't think of too many things in this world that gives me more happiness than to be a part of this parishional family that we have. But I will tell you that the very most difficult part of this life and this spiritual life and this life of walking in the footsteps of Jesus Christ, the Son of God, is to hear the confession and the reconciliation of the Catholics who have committed the most unspeakable acts of hideous, sick, unspeakable.
What are we talking about here?
We're talking about sexual acts. We're talking about acts of violence.
I mean, are these criminal acts that, I know you don't want to tell me, but should the police be?
No, I'm not going to get to that aspect of it. It's really not what I want to talk about. It's not what you want me to talk about. Right?
All right, but you're talking about unspeakable acts.
I'm saying that you're hearing this every day as a Catholic priest. And so the stress becomes almost too much. And you find yourself, yes, you find yourself stealing. And you might even find yourself looking at a woman. And you want the woman because the stress becomes so unbearable. And you might find yourself looking at another man. You want the man. And perhaps in even some case, a priest that might have been a very good man and a good priest, you see a boy, and you want a boy.
And you're not telling me that, you're not excusing that.
No. I'm not excusing that, no, not at all. But I'm saying,
Well, to say that you're bringing in a child molestation, I don't want to talk about that.
No, I know that there are a lifelong criminals, I understand. But I'm saying just a one time only, where you might even think about having a boy after you've listened to some of the filth that these people come into the confessional with. And at that time, you might think to yourself, I'd like to have a boy. But nothing to the extent of what we've seen.
Because I don't want you coming on here and somehow giving a rationale.
No. I'm not doing that at all. No. I'm simply saying the pressure of hearing this filth in the confessional booth is so much that you may say, I want a woman. I want a man. I want to have another man. I have sex with a man. I have sex with a boy. Or steal the money, as his father did.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. On the line is Father James McCord, who's going to get going here. But I'm very, very fascinated by his rationale here. He is saying that this Roman Catholic priest in Waterbury, Connecticut, stole $1.2 million over 7 years. $1,200,000 and used the money for restaurants, hotels, threads, cars. Why? Because the pressure of listening to people's sins in the confessional, the church owed him. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back. Phil Hendry Show at 877-876-PHIL. It's 877-876-PHIL and online at philhendryshow.com. Father James McQuarters has joined us as we talk about another Catholic priest in Waterbury, Connecticut, Kevin Gray, who turned himself into Waterbury police today after he learned that police were going to charge him with larceny, the theft of $1.3 million over the course of 7 years. My understanding is the father was able to get a hold of this money because he was doing the accounting for the parish. And he said he stole this money and used it on hotels, used it on male escorts, used it for personal expenses, used it for restaurants and clothing, because he felt he had it coming to him. He was owed it by the church. He was unhappy with the various church assignments. You've said, Father, that part of that stress is the stress of the confessional, listening to confessions.
Yes, that's true. And I have to say to you that if you hear enough of the behavior of human beings is so base and it's so low that you come out of that experience needing to release the pressure.
Now, I understand you were disciplined yourself, right?
I was, yes.
Can you tell me about that?
It was a similar situation. I'd been hearing the confessions, the 10:30 confessions on a Wednesday morning. And there's one man who had confessed. And the litany of this man's offenses against God was truly remarkable in the depravity of this man and how disgusting this human being was and how sickening his sins, sexual in nature, theft, every kind of depravity. And I left the church in a state I should never have gone on to the grounds of the dental school, because I should have gone into the back into the residence and perhaps resumed some sleeping. But the mother was dropping her daughter off, and I knew the woman very well. And she got out of the car to drop her daughter off, and I said to her something very crude, sexual in nature, having to do with wanting to do something.
Well, that sounds almost like a child.
Phil, you don't understand. The emotional defenses are down. The intellectual defenses are down. Your physical defenses are down. You have been listening to people in the confessional all morning as they are confessing sins that would create a physical reaction of regurgitation, to vomit. How disgusting the human race is, that it wipes off on you. It's almost as if it's a foul, some sort of a foul material that's wiped off on you.
Boy, all right, 877-876-PHIL. We'll take a couple of calls here, and we're with Father James McQuarters as we talk about this priest in Waterbury, Connecticut. Eric, you're on the Phil Henry Show with Father McQuarters. Go ahead.
Yeah.
And your radio's turned up, so you need to turn your radio down, please.
This guy needs to be arrested for the things that he's saying. This is a travesty. I can't believe you have this guy on the air saying that because he listened to confession and administered confessions to people, that it became a burden on him, and he emulated or reenacted some of these things in his own life?
No, he's not saying that. Did you say that?
No, I didn't say anything of the sort.
Well, I've been listening for 15 minutes. You've been telling me.
No, he's not saying that. No, you haven't been listening. We're talking about a priest in Waterbury, Connecticut, who stole money. And Father McQuarters is saying the man stole money because of the pressure he's under listening to people's confessions.
Yeah, but then you also
Catholic?
Said that...
Are you Catholic? Because you don't really know what I'm talking about,
do
you?
I am Catholic.
When's the last time you went to reconciliation?
Excuse me?
You don't even know what reconciliation is. When you learn what that is, then you'll find out what that is.
I went to Catholic school for 12 years.
But that's probably 30 years later. You don't know what reconciliation is. And once you do, you'll understand that it's the hearing of sins. Listen to me, will you? Listen to me. You've already got the first part of this wrong, so you've got to shut up and listen. And once you learn what that is, then you'll know what it is that I'm speaking of. But you weren't listening, were you? You were listening to some salsa music or something, weren't you?
Well, I don't know what he was listening to.
Well, what were you listening to?
I was listening to you saying how...
No, yes, you weren't listening to me. No, you weren't listening. You thought you were listening to me, but you were fooling around in your car with your radio turned up, but you weren't listening to me at all, were you?
You were trying...
You should go to reconciliation, my young man, accusing me of things, playing with it, with your zipper down. The things, Bill, that I want to...
All right, hold on for a minute here, all right? We're not in the classroom.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, and our website is philhendryshow.com, live streaming video and audio of the show right now. Father McWhorter, I want to get to some phone calls, but I want to ask you, there's a priest in Waterbury, we're talking about this Father Gray. This is a man who has embezzled or stolen or has been guilty of the larceny of, $1.3 million? Because you say, in part, he's under a lot of pressure as a priest.
No, that's not entirely correct, Phil. I'm not saying...
No, I know. You're not saying it's not just pressure and priest. It's the confessional.
It's the confessional. You have to understand, I don't know how many people are aware of the fact that confessional is a place where people are confessing their sins. And they are disgusting. Some of them are just absolutely disgusting.
All right, that's what I want to ask you. You can't give me a characterization. I mean, I'm not asking you to give me names. I understand that you can't do that. But some kind of...
I can give you the type of sin, if that's what you're asking me.
Yeah.
I can give you the type. I can even tell you what the sin would be. For instance, something that I was very heartsick when I heard this. Yeah, you don't want to judge people, but I personally... I can feel very heartsick when I hear a man say to me, as I heard a man say on Sunday, as we were doing reconciliation late in the afternoon, he said that he was in support of this Arizona immigration law. I could feel my stomach almost, it wanted to heave up, you know, and heave the food out of my... vomit, you know.
Because he said he was what?
In support of the Arizona immigration law. This is a kind of a sickness.
Well, that's not what I would call... Well, forgive me, but I'm not a priest.
No, you're not a priest.
Well, it's not what I would call a vile, disgusting sin.
If in terms of how you look at these things, perhaps not. In terms of how I look at them, in terms of how the church looks at them, in terms of how God... looks at our relations to those who are less fortunate, our immigrant brothers and sisters, Indian people that come across the Anza-Barriga Desert in the heat with nothing to drink, no hope but a coyote leading the way, and these people die, and I wanted to vomit. As Jesus said, be either hot or cold, but never be lukewarm. I would vomit you from my mouth. I wanted to vomit this. From my mouth. And so Father Gray hears this, he wants to vomit. And so instead he steals. May God forgive him, it's wrong. But he's had enough. He's had enough.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to a phone call here on the Phil Hendry Show. In Santa Rosa, California, listening on KNEW is Maria. Go ahead, Maria. You're on the Phil Hendry Show here with Father James McWhorter.
Hi, I'm a practicing Catholic. I go to confession regularly, and I'm just completely blown away with how this priest has been talking about going to confession. When you go to confession, you're supposed to, it's like you're talking to Jesus, and you're supposed to be forgiven.
Yeah, that's correct.
And I don't think Jesus would sit there and talk about how. I don't think he would sit there and say the things that you're saying about people. I really don't. It makes me unsafe
to go to confession. You know, I'm not saying this to the person. I understand that, Maria, but I'm not saying this to the person. I'm not saying to you that your sins are a disgusting display for human beings.
Well, there's a lot of disgusting things out there, and if you can't handle it, then you shouldn't do it. You really shouldn't. I think you're doing a big disservice to Catholics. I think you're doing a really big disservice. I think it's that you come off really bad.
I'm only talking about one priest.
First of all, this priest embezzled.
Well, didn't you say... I wanted to say, Maria, Father McCordis, you said that you came out of the confessional one morning and went over and said something vulgar.
I did, yes.
To a mother dropping her child off.
I did, but what I'm trying to say to you and to this young lady is the pressure of the confessional booth listening to this litany of depravity day in and day out.
That's your job, and if you can't handle it, then you shouldn't be a priest. You're doing a disservice. People are coming to you because they're trying to be forgiven. They think they're going to come to somebody that represents Jesus, and they're going to be forgiven, and they're going to give grace. They're not.
You can't forgive them
with that attitude. No, you cannot. It sounds like you're
they
really stressed out, and you shouldn't be a priest anymore. You're doing a big disservice. This is why people are going like, oh, look at all these Catholics. Hear this, and then you talk about this other priest. Listen to me. This other priest who steals $1 million, he stole that money from people who gave their money to the church. They didn't give it to him for his hotel bills or for anything. And that's a lame excuse that he had to listen to confessions, and they're so vile, and he had to go steal $1 million. Come on, man. Where are you anyway?
Father Gray, like, is a ban. No priest makes the claim of anything else. No priest makes the claim because I have, as we say, the turned-around collar. Do I say that I am above man or that I'm of the angel? I'm a man, and as such, I ask God's forgiveness, as you. And when I am in the place of Jesus, in the confessional, in the act of reconciliation, yes, I, of course, through Christ, our Lord, provide that forgiveness. But as a man, when I leave the confessional, and I see you walking across the parking lot, and I say to you, you've got a great ass.
Well, then, you know what, Father? You really have a problem.
Wait a minute, man. Yeah, hold on. Maria, I'm sorry. Father, that's not even that. You know, you can say you're a man and...
I'm a man and I falter because I've been listening to... let's just say it's Maria. I'm not saying this is Maria. But let's just say Maria was in the confessional and I had to listen to the filth that I have to listen. It's coming out of her mouth.
And then you say, then you seem to think it's okay for you to walk across the parking lot and tell a woman she's got a great ass?
I didn't say it was okay. No. I said that this is part of the pressure. And I guess I can't say that because Maria thinks I'm not supposed to be under any pressure. You know,
I'm saying that even our Lord in Gethsemane cried. Don't say things
like
somebody's ass and then hide behind our Lord. Don't do that.
He cried.
That's
I'm not
lie.
Hiding. I'm
that
quoting scripture.
Lying.
I'm quoting scripture. Jesus wept. You know that's scripture. You know.
Okay, so Jesus wept. He was going to be hanging from a cross in a few hours, and he knew that. He could see that. That's why he was under that kind of stress.
And so it is for me. And so it is for a lot of priests. That I know
well,
I've
then
got
you
to
should
walk
get out. Then you're in the wrong business, my dear. I'm sorry to say, but if you cannot represent Jesus that way, then you should not be a priest, and you should go do something else. If it's that hard for you, everybody has it hard. You know what? Everybody has it hard. There's horrible things that happen in the world, in my life, and everybody's life. That's why they come to you. And if you can't handle it, then you're just, like, twisting this whole thing. And this is why people hate Catholics. This is why.
I'm telling you, Maria,
on the radio, you have harmed more Catholics than in your conversation
not,
just now.
People
are going like,
faith.
Oh, my God. Does he really think that?
I've helped the faithful understand why some of our priests are faltering. And why are we having a hard time keeping our priests in their vows? And in the
because the devil's in and the I, world, that's why. Because there's evil happening in the world. There's evil happening in the priesthood. That's
but
why.
I would ask you, Maria, have you ever considered, after you left the confessional, have you ever considered what it is you just laid on that man in there? And what kind of burden he's under now?
No, I haven't considered that.
That
no, I'm sorry.
To...
I haven't considered
no,
that.
No, that's not exactly.
I feel if I'm going to confession, that's supposed to be Jesus there, and I'm supposed to be... I tell my sins because I want to be forgiven, and I'm sorry, and I'm hoping to come out of there with grace to say some.
That's right. That's right. You're not supposed to come out of the confessional feeling guilty. You're supposed to leave your guilt there. You go, you do your penance, and you're forgiven. And that's, as a Catholic, that's why we have reconciliation.
Yes, but what I'm saying to you and Maria, don't the two of you ever recognize the reality that when you go to a confession, it's as if you've gone into an outhouse and you left it on the floor and someone's got to come in?
Well, what is that supposed to mean?
You think that when you go to confession, it's just words, but it's like defecating.
Well, that's a hell of an image. You know, the idea that...
No, I'm not saying that I have to clean it up, but I'm happy to clean it up.
You go talk to your bishop and tell your bishop what it was you said on public radio so that everybody can listen to a Catholic priest. That's what you ought to do, and you ought to go to confession yourself for sticking up for some priest that stole $1 million from his parishioners.
I didn't.
You need to go to your bishop or your monsignor or something and say, man, I really screwed this up good. This is ridiculous. You know that?
What did I screw up other than to say, are you saying the confession is...
All right, look, I got to move on here, all right?
No, you can't. You both of you say you don't believe the confession is like going in and going into a bathroom stall or toilet.
I've never in my life considered... Thank you very much for your call, Maria. 877-876-PHIL. I've never considered that ever. Gloria in Houston, listening to us on KPRC. Go ahead, Gloria. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
You've never considered the possibility that the confession is like that?
No, I haven't. Gloria, go ahead.
Okay, as I was listening to the priest talk about this other priest that, you know, sometimes priests have
fallacies
and mistakes. And, you know, they have thoughts. Well, we all have thoughts. But the difference is the ability to be able to not act on those thoughts. I want to kill the person who cut me off the traffic, but I don't. I don't take my gun out and shoot him. Okay?
Of course
because
not.
Then you know, and if I
but
get
that's
to
not
a point
the same
where
thing.
I'm,
that's not,
if I'm,
that's
if
not
I'm
the
watching
thing.
Children, yeah, if I'm watching children, I'm taking care of them, but I have an overwhelming urge because they're getting on my nerves to start hitting them in the head or something, then I don't need to be doing that. And maybe those priests should be able to look at that and go, wait a minute, if I'm having these kind of thoughts and I'm struggling with them, then maybe I need to be doing something else. This is not what I need to be doing. And
I think that on-the-job pressure is the same for every kind of job. You have it, I have it, we all have on-the-job pressure. Only
correct.
Priest, though, is not allowed, the only priest is not allowed to let off a little steam. Now, what is wrong with letting off some steam?
But the man stole, Father. He stole money.
Well, this was money that was in the resident's account.
Not 7 years, $1.3 million.
All right, then I will say again to you what I said to the other lady. How much of that filth do you think you can listen to before you go off the deep end? Go ahead, answer that.
Therefore, you stop doing it. If you can't handle the filth and it's time to get out, maybe it's time to take a break, maybe it's time to go on a sabbatical, something else, because there's only so much that you can take, that's understandable. But like I said, if I don't stop when I know that I might commit an act to hurt a child, it could even be my own child, and therefore, I don't want to end up on the 6 o'clock news. I need to get some help and get out of there.
When I have gone into the confessional, a priest looks at the confessional booth as if it's a toilet stall, and I'm standing there holding towels. And, okay, I'll go even further. I'm black.
Oh, man.
Well, no, you have to understand something. That
the confessional's a toilet stall.
To a priest, yes. And I know that through the course of the afternoon, it's going to get foul in there. And Barry or Gloria or Phil or whoever comes in, lets one go, and... Now, that's very crude, I understand. But if you look at it that way, you can certainly understand why a man wouldn't want to take a little bit of cheese, as they say, and a couple of weekends away with a male escort or whatever floats his boat, you know. Is it a sin? Yes, it is. Am I perfect? No, I'm not. Am I Jesus Christ? No, I'm not.
Are you Jesus Christ? No, you're not. Is Gloria Jesus Christ? No, she. Well, she couldn't be. Is she Mary Magdalene? No, she isn't.
All right, where are we going with this?
I'm just saying that the spirit of forgiveness, I don't hear it in your radio broadcast this evening, Phil. I don't hear it among the people that call it. I don't hear it among the people that listen. I hear a lot of judgment of Father Gray. And as Christians, we leave the judging to God, don't we? Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And I wanted to ask Gloria if the lady's still there. Do you know where Signal Hill is? Do you know where Signal Hill, California is?
I'm sorry, say that again?
You know where Signal Hill, California is, where the oil is pumped?
Okay.
Is this about I'm not going to pay those shipping costs? Because you own the railroads. Of course you do. Of course you do.
Okay. Thank you very much, Gloria, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. I didn't understand that.
No, I say to Gloria, she said, I put a pipeline to the sea, you know, because I'm not going to pay those shipping costs to the railroad. I said, but she doesn't control the shipping costs. I said, you don't own the railroads? Of course you do. Of course you do. That was from the movie There Will Be Blood. And
oh, yeah. Why were you quoting that?
Because of the way, of course you do. That was what I was saying to her. That's exactly what Daniel Day-Lewis, or I should say Daniel Plainfield said. Of course you do.
877-876-PHIL. Father James McCord is with us talking about a priest that embezzled $1.3 million from his parish. Why? Because having to listen to people in the confessional with all of that, quote, depravity finally drove him around the bend. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You don't own the railroad? Of course you do.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
That, you know.
No, I don't know. Last segment here with Father James McCorders, as we talk about this Father Kevin Gray in Waterbury, Connecticut, a priest who embezzled $1,300,000 from his parish and used it for male escorts, used it for a lot of adult entertainment. He's a priest. It's a vow of poverty, Father. And when you say a priest goes into the confessional and listens to all of this stuff that's depraved and that it pushes him around the bend, it's still theft and it's still breaking that vow of poverty, isn't it?
Phil, I recall talking to a priest, a young priest, and this was right after he'd come out of seminary. And he had said to me that he found the vows to be constrictive and that especially this reconciliation was very difficult for him to hear the confessions of so many people with such vile and sick things that they were saying. And I said to him, if I get all the way up there and I find out you've been lying to me, I'm going to come and find you and I'm going to want more than my money back. Is that all right with you? And he said, yes, sir. He said, all right, young man. He said, God bless you. And I said, and you too, young man.
All right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Let's go to Gemma in Richmond, Virginia, listening on WLEE. Gemma, go ahead. You're on with Father James McCorders.
Hi.
Yes,
I'm studying to be a... Hi. I'm an undergrad, and I'm studying to be a psychiatrist, and I'm just a little disconcerted
She's studying to be a psychiatrist, did you say, Gemma?
Oh, yes. A psychiatrist. Very good. Very good.
Thank you. Well, I'm just a little disconcerted by your comments that you're excusing priests acting out on their frustrations and difficulties dealing with other people's problems, other people's negative behavior. Because I feel as though, as a counselor, you're trained and supposed to be taking on those burdens in order to help the people whom...
Well, that's certainly true, but I'm sure, Gemma, that there's been a part of your education that's got to do with I don't know what you would call it, but on-the-job stresses and so forth, you see. And so that when, for instance, a police officer is forced to discharge his weapon in the line of duty,
and perhaps might even have taken a life. And then certainly you will counsel that man or that woman and help them through an experience such as this. And certainly we know of our soldiers in the Army and the Navy and so forth, you know. Mm-hmm. And so it is with the priest, that the Catholic priest listens to this day in and day out. And I can't even tell you the sins that I've heard. If I was really a sick man, and I was really a usurious man, I'd send these stories into those kooky detective novels, you know, those kooky detective magazines.
Mm-hmm.
Make myself a fortune, you know. I could make myself a fortune sending these stories in that I hear in a confessional into one of those kooky detective magazines. But I don't do that. I don't do that.
And I understand that. And I also heard your comment earlier expressing that perhaps the stress of listening to those stories daily, which is very cumbersome, I'm sure, might lead someone to perhaps molest a child. And I feel...
Well, a boy, just a boy, you know. That's what you'd want, would be a boy. You know what I mean?
Well, no, if I were listening...
I'm talking about a boy. For instance, if you're on a long voyage, if you're sailing a ship across the Atlantic Ocean,
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
They asked me to resign, and in fact, they harassed me.
You never even say thank you.
Yes, Mel, you're imbalanced. There's something wrong with
they
you.
They were
you
not
need...
allowed to go to Cuba under the federal regulations.
I was born of a whore and bred as an assassin.
It's a biohazard.
World famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and, you know, and the world's a beautiful place. And we just take you anywhere. And I mean anywhere to get at it. 877-876-PHIL and our website, philhenryshow.com, where you can access our live streaming video, listen to live streaming audio, download the show the next day, download countless hours of archival material, take a look at our video archives, take a look at our news feed, join in commenting on the various items we have in our news feed, get email access to your faithful servant here, Phil. It's all there at philhenryshow.com. That's the spot. If you want to talk to me about something, you know, and you haven't been able to talk to me here on the show, email me there. And we do answer our email. We've been a little remiss here lately, but sooner or later we answer it. And I'm being a little facetious. We do answer it. I'm not saying we don't. So don't despair. 877-876-PHIL is the number here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show. This story, which is relatively fresh, and it is one that I think bears reporting. A wide-body United Airlines jet shaken by severe turbulence was diverted today to Denver International Airport with at least 25 people injured on board. This was United Flight 967. It hit turbulence over Kansas after taking off from Dulles International Airport outside of Washington. It was en route to Los Angeles. Federal Aviation Administration and airline officials reported on this. They said there were storms in the area. One of the United spokespeople, Jean Medina, was speaking to Reuters. She said that the flight crew immediately diverted the aircraft to Denver to get medical attention as quickly as possible for those who are injured. Medina said 255 passengers and 10 crew members were on board this plane, a twin-engine Boeing 777. Eric Tate, a spokesman for the Denver Fire Department, said the plane landed safely shortly after 7 p.m. local time. And that would have been about, 6 p.m. here on the West Coast, 9 p.m. back east, so about 5 hours ago. She said, this is Jean Medina now, said she knew of 25 people taken to hospital but don't know the nature or the extent of their injuries. Art Griego, we just got on the line here with us from Santa Monica Airport tonight. Art is a former commercial pilot now doing private charter work and is a longtime contributor to the Phil Hendry Show on aviation matters. Art, good evening. Thanks for joining us on late notice.
It's always a pleasure, Phil.
Can you tell me about the Boeing 777? It's a twin engine. It had 255 passengers and 10 crew members. How a plane of this size could get so, excuse me, so rocked and sort of buffeted about?
Phil, I would be happy to answer all these questions. I wanted to, if you'll allow me, a little personal opinion here.
Go ahead.
I don't think, I'm going to try to phrase this the best way I can. I don't think the reporting of this story is the best thing right now for an airline industry that is really suffering. And I'll explain. I know you have a responsibility to your listeners, but when you report every little plane that had a turbulence problem because you get hammered, I know you do, Phil, I know we do, I know everybody in the airline business does, you get hammered by somebody that just got off a plane and they felt a little bit of, you know, a bump, or they got scared because they felt the plane dip a few hundred feet, and they jump off the plane, and the first thing they do is call a talk, one of the talk, the talk radio programs, and different, on the different talk stations, and it suddenly becomes a big thing. Now, I know that you have to report these things out of the public's right to know, but every little bump. And
all right, I got to interrupt you here, though, okay?
But every little bump and every little flight.
Let me interrupt you for just a minute, Art. People were injured, all right?
Well, there are reasons for that, and I'm going to get into that if I could, because this is what happens, Phil, when you and other members of the media report on every single solitary thing that happens in the sky. This is hard to explain. I've been in the aviation business my whole life. I mean, it has been my life, and the airline industry is my life, and I want to see it prosper. And at one time, it was a much more successful enterprise than it is now, and it will be someday again, but we are struggling. And when you people in the media report every single thing that goes wrong, every plane that goes down, you got to report immediately. You can't. There's no cooling off period. I mean, there used to be a thing, a cooling off period for a lot of news stories. This is some turbulence.
Yeah, but I'm telling you, 25 people. And what do you mean every plane that goes down? I mean, we have to report those.
You say you have to report them, and I would ask you, why do you have to report them? For instance,
if you're telling me a plane crash, that we shouldn't report that?
I'm not telling you how to do your job. I'm asking the question, why do you have to report every single thing that happens in the aviation industry? Do you report every single automobile accident that happens?
That's a different thing, Art.
No, hold on. If you would indulge me, Phil. Do you report every single automobile accident?
Of course we don't.
All right. But you report every single plane crash. And I would submit to you, not you personally, but I think you're swept up in something. And that is the hysteria of the media, the hysteria of the public, and the railroad industry, which has been always on the side of reporting plane crashes, because the more plane crashes that get reported, the more the railroad industry gets people riding on trains. And we have been engaged in this problem for a long time. There is nothing that I'm telling
you. You got to hold on for a minute, man. Now, I've given you a lot of time here.
But I'm just asking for equal time.
No, but when a plane like this one tonight was flying, 25 people injured.
No, people are going to get injured, and there are reasons why people get injured when there's turbulence.
All right, but the turbulence was so heavy that we had 25 people taken to hospital, according to the news sources that we're reading, on a plane that carries 255 people and 10 crew members. That's a big-ass plane, brother. You know that, right?
Well, it depends on what you mean by a, quote, big-ass plane. It's an aircraft that we fly them, and we land them, and we do wonderful things with them, and people have great flights. And we hit turbulence, and someone that falls down because He wasn't in his seat when he was told to sit down. He didn't put on his seatbelt when he was told to put his seatbelt on. He was standing around talking to people, having a drink. And you've seen it on these long flights. A guy will get up in first class, don't go over, and he'll talk, and he'll sit on the edge of the seat. We hit some turbulence, and that individual slams his head into a window, or he is, he's thrown on the floor, or the drink cart is going to catch somebody because it's very heavy, and it's going to put a pretty severe wound in someone's eye or his face. It happens because people are not paying attention. That's not because airlines are unsafe.
And well, I didn't say that. Okay.
Then why do you people insist on reporting all this?
You know, I wanted to talk about that.
No, I know you want to talk about it, but why do you... This story about this United flight with these people getting injured because they don't know how to sit down and... forgive me for saying this. They don't know how to sit down and shut up when a flight attendant tells them to. And then you report it, and yes, every little plane crash, you report it. You guys report it immediately. There's no cooling off.
Are you telling me that when there's a plane crash, you're asking for the media to delay reporting it?
Here's what we're asking, and I don't think this is anything that any other industry hasn't asked for it at one time or another. If there is a plane crash, don't treat it as if it's the first one in the history of flight. It is a very common occurrence. You don't have to go on the air right away and talk about it. You can delay it. And in some instances, you don't have to report it at all. I think it depends upon the size of the plane. When there's turbulence and people are injured because they aren't bright enough to sit down and shut up when a flight attendant tells them to, and you report it on a nationally syndicated radio show, You're hurting an entire industry. You're hurting a lot of good people.
Well, you know, it's not my intention.
No, it may not be your intention, but you're hurting a lot of good people.
It's not my intention to hurt a lot of good people, Art. It's also not my intention to ignore things that are happening that are in the public interest or of public interest. Aircraft that experiences turbulence to the effect that people are injured. This is news. People want to hear this.
Why do they want to hear it? The people that got injured on that airplane, we used to call it the Spaz Express. You remember back in the day when you could say Spaz?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
All right, well, when we were pilots and there was someone fell down, we'd say we got the Spaz Express going today because we hit turbulence and some ass, pardon my language, broke his leg. I'm saying sit down and shut up and you won't get hurt. And then you don't have to report it. And as far as reporting plane crashes, I think that we've had enough of it. I think the audience is tired of it. I think the news consumer is tired of every plane crash being reported. I just don't think we need it, and it hurts an industry. And
if there's a plane, let me ask you something. If a plane crashes, okay.
I bet the planes crash.
No, I know that. But if a plane goes down, let's say this plane tonight, United Flight's 967 crashed. Let's say it crashed. It didn't, but let's say it crashed and everybody was killed. And it crashed right in downtown Denver or something.
When was the last time you heard of a plane crashing in downtown anything? Other than 9/11, when's the last time?
No, I'm saying it. Let's just say...
No, I don't deal in hypotheticals. I'm sorry, I don't do it. When was the last time, other than 9/11, planes crash in cornfields, planes crash in open spaces where no one gets hurt? The people on board are up for grabs, but it was their choice to be on that plane. But the fact is, nobody on the ground gets hurt. And for you guys to report all of this is a grave disservice.
What do you mean the people on the plane are up for grabs?
What I'm saying is, when you guys report these plane crashes and nobody on the ground died, you are reporting nothing. You're making up a story. Now, the people on the plane are going to die, but they're up for grabs because they chose to be on the plane. But I think it is irresponsible to report plane crashes and turbulence when someone who was too stupid to get into a seatbelt got thrown against a door or was thrown into a windshield or into a window. It hurts an industry. It hurts an entire industry that I think to this day still does a remarkable job transporting people. We keep the prices down. We keep the service good. And I just wish you would stop it. And I wish you would, other people in your business would stop it.
All right, Art, we'll continue talking about it, okay?
I appreciate that.
877-876-PHIL. Art Griego, who is a retired commercial pilot, feels that, you know, that we over-report plane crashes and we over-report turbulence. In fact, he says that we should put a cooling off period on our reporting of plane crashes, meaning hold off reporting on them for a good 48 hours. And the same thing with the story about turbulence. Do we report too many plane crashes? 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. This was a flight that I was referring to this evening that just experienced turbulence. It was fine. It landed. There were a few people hurt. United Flight 967, it landed in Denver. People got medical attention, and I believe that the plane landed safely after 7 p.m. in Denver. Yeah, I don't know about its ongoing to Los Angeles. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL online at philhendryshow.com with live streaming video of the show right now as well as audio. Father James McQuarters, I had Father McQuarters on last hour. Art Griego has joined us from Santa Monica. We're talking ostensibly about United Flight 967 this evening that hit some turbulence over Kansas on its way to Los Angeles. The plane is fine. The people are fine. We do have an update. Some 30 people now, not 25, 30 people, they say, now were injured. 25 were taken to the hospital. The plane was not damaged. It did land at Denver around 7 o'clock. And so we're talking about, you know, this. We were talking about air safety. And, Art, you are of a mind that that we over-report these things.
Well, you just now you said, yeah, here's an update, 30 people instead of 25. To me,
well, I mean, that was the update I got.
You get an update, Phil, on a plane, and you can't wait to tell everyone how many people are hurt or dead, because I think...
What are you talking about, me specifically?
Well, I don't know, but the media cannot wait to let everybody in on how many are dead, how many are... And I hear the reporting, you know, body parts... If a plane crashes, I think we can safely assume that that's not the first time it's happened. We have automobile crashes all the time. We have people that, you have all kinds of things that happen. But for some reason, a plane crash, every single one is reported, and every single one is reported as soon as it happens. And even something like turbulence, those 30 people on a Spaz Express from Dallas to L.A.,
I wish you wouldn't call it the Spaz Express. You don't know if these people were not belted in.
Well, you know what? Five will get you 10, that those people were injured as the result of not doing what the flight attendant said, which is that every time you have turbulence, you sit out and you shut up, and you belt in.
Well, you don't shut up. You sit down and you put on your belt.
No. Excuse me, but I flew for 30 years. You sit down, you put on the safety belt, and you shut up. That is the standard... of the FAA and NTSB. And these people are standing around, yap, 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 yap. What happened? They get the leg broken, they get their face put through a glass. And then they turn around and they say, oh my God, flying is not safe. What isn't safe is to be on board a Spaz Express, and excuse me, I didn't mean to say, but you know what I'm talking about. When one of these people comes flying past you, and could take your head clean off. I've seen it happen.
What do you mean, when these people...
Well, the people are not belted in.
877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show with Art Griego. Let's talk here about... Lolly in Yuba City, California, listening on KNEW. Hello, Lolly. You're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Phil. I was listening to the gentleman saying what he said about the airplane. I don't know what he's talking about. I mean, me as a consumer, I would like to know what planes are safest, what airlines do to rectify their errors, and I want to fly on the safest way possible. I know I'm taking a chance every time I get on an airplane, but I want to know. I did work for an airline in the past, and I was in one of their planes went down when I was on the job, and I was one of the agents designated to call the family and confirm that their loved ones were on that flight. And I was that was a very sad thing to do, and I wanted them to hear from the I was glad that they were hearing it from the company instead of God knows who. So
I used to fly. I would say, Lolly, that in that situation, you should have, you don't have to pick the phone up right away and, oh, gee, guess what? Your loved ones are dead. You look, we need to.
Well, I'm sure she didn't do it that way.
No, I know that, but I'm saying it's like the airline can't wait to tell people.
No, that's how it happened, but
the airline can't wait to tell people.
She gets all kinds of stories and everything from everywhere, and I was glad that the airline handled it in a very positive, good way where the family at least had a chance to grieve and had their peace, and instead of,
What's behind all of that, Lolly, is you got Amtrak and you've got a lot of these railroads that have, they can't wait for you, Lolly, to get out there and talk about all the dead people, because guess what happens? Oh, there's a railroad station across the street. I think I'll take a train. So
But you're mischaracterizing what this girl is saying. She's not gleefully running out there. You know,
but I mean, every single plane crash, every single piece of turbulence, every time a plane goes down, you know, and these planes land in the middle of cornfields. They don't land downtown. No one gets hurt.
Yes, the people on board.
I understand. Those people are up for grabs. And that's what Lolly understands, that they're up for grabs.
It's not
going to
stop me from flying whenever I hear.
Well, I know. But the people that are on the plane are up for grabs, is what I'm saying.
All right, we'll be back. Phil Hendry Show, 877-866.
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. And, online at philhendryshow.com, and we're also on Twitter at twitter.com/realphilhendry. That's my Twitter account, and then we have our show account, which is kind of different. We have the staff at twitter.com/philhendryshow and on Facebook at facebook.com/philhendry. Art Griego joins us. We're talking about this flight that was had a lot of turbulence, and you have made the claim here, Art, and we'll get to people's phone calls in a moment, that there's too much reporting on these plane crashes.
Well, you know, look, you and other members of the media, Phil, and I know you, you're a good man. You'll say that, oh, this is very serious, but there you are talking about your Twitter account. And
well, that's just part of my promoting the show.
I know that, but you're in the middle of an hour on plane crashes. What better time than to talk about your Twitter account?
You're making it sound like, goody gumdrops, I got a plane crash. You know,
I'm not characterizing you. I'm saying that that's what it sounds like. It sounds like we have another opportunity to ruin the airline industry. I think I'll plug my Facebook account. And I'm saying...
No, that's not what I'm thinking.
No, but that's what the effect is. And that's what I've been trying to tell you and the people that are calling your program this evening. That when you talk about a plane that crashed and you're including the numbers of people that died on the plane, and you ignore the fact that no one on the ground died, you are giving the impression that the aircraft in the sky and it's unsafe and people shouldn't fly, and gradually what happens is no one wants to fly and the airline industry goes away.
You just said that when we report the people that died in the aircraft and we ignore that nobody died on the ground, in other words, what you want me to say is what?
I'd rather you not report the story, but when you do report the story, you say a lot of people died, and here's how many, 300. Okay, that's bad enough. That's caused a bunch of people to say, I'm not going to fly anymore. And you never ever, you and other people in the media, never ever try to put a little bit of a silver lining on the news by saying, but it didn't land in a city or it didn't crash into a populated area. It was another, again, a cornfield, and the airline industry is mindful that when our planes, you know, unfortunately have a problem and we have to crash in them or we can't, you know, we can't fly it good anymore, then it's going to crash in a cornfield, but and no one's going to die, but you never report that. All right?
You know, well, how am I going to report that? Am I going to say the plane crashed in a cornfield, no one died in the cornfield?
You do not emphasize that. You're not understanding what I'm saying. You don't emphasize that there are aspects of flight that planes are going to crash all the time. But and the people are up for grabs that fly on them. And
yeah, you've said that.
Yes, I have said that. Is there a problem with that?
No, there's not a problem, but you keep saying the people that are flying in these aircraft are up for grabs, and what I should be talking about are that nobody died on the ground.
Or don't report it at all. We'd much rather that you not report it, because every time you do, that's one more, you know, one more tick of the clock toward the doomsday when the airline industry ceases to exist. And Amtrak comes roaring back, and the railroad industry comes roaring back, and they have won a victory. Amtrak has destroyed the airline industry by putting these stories in the news.
Well, Amtrak doesn't cause plane crashes, okay?
No, but they love it. They love it. When you talk about everybody that died in the plane, and you never, ever say, but nobody died on, no one died from the plane crashing on top of them.
877-876-PHIL. That sounds pretty ridiculous. Here is Robert in San Francisco. Robert, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, sir.
Sounds ridiculous.
Talking about reporting the news that way. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
How are you all this evening, first of all?
Good. Thank you.
That's good. How are you, Art?
Yeah, I'm fine, sir.
Okay. It seems like what you're saying is to keep the people that fly the most out of the loop of what's going on in reference to all the flights and information that they need to select the correct airlines, the safest airlines, the airlines with opportunity.
You know, we're burning daylight here, sir. Did you have a...
I wouldn't be rude like that.
Yeah, I know, but he's... Yeah, did you have a question? Yeah, just... Are you going to be done today, or...
What is your problem, Mark?
What does he want?
He's explaining it. Robert, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you.
Okay, go, yeah.
You're listening to me. I was listening to you.
Well,
you weren't, because you kept saying to the guy, are you burning... We're burning daylight.
Well, was he going to get to a question?
He'll get to his question when he's finished saying what he... I'm sorry, Robert. Go ahead.
It seems like, Art, you're doing more harm than than the media, because you're showing people, seeing that you've been in the industry for so long, showing the industry as well as consumers of the lack of... Hello?
Phil?
Robert, would you hold on for a minute? Art, you're being rude.
How am I being rude?
I can hear you going,
Well, this guy, you know, he's like it's just a head with a mouth.
Robert, I think your point, and it's a good point, is that what Art is asking is that the people who are most involved in air travel, frequent travelers, people who would be the benefit the most from the information, he wants them to be kept in the dark. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. It's not.
Yeah.
And that's not
Art, what about that, Art?
Well, I didn't hear him ask that. I heard him, if I am not asking anything other than the following thing, that an airline industry be saved, that you, Mr. Hendry, and Robert, and anybody else do what they can to save an industry. Because every time a plane crashes, do I hear that no one was killed? No, I hear 300 people died.
Okay, well, that's the truth.
No, it is not the truth.
The media has the responsibility to put forth the truth.
What was the truth? What was the truth? You say, well, you said that was true?
Right.
What was true? What was true about that?
Every casualty needs to be...
You're talking about the people in the plane. Are you talking about the people inside the plane?
Inside, outside. It doesn't matter.
No, that doesn't... that doesn't count. The people inside the plane are up for grabs.
What does that mean they're up for grabs, man?
Why don't they report that no one died outside the airplane?
Because there's 300 dead people inside, by God, by the time it lands, they're not inside anything. They're all over the place. They may be incinerated. They may be vaporized, depending on how fast the damn plane was going. What do you mean they're up for grabs?
You don't count the passengers. That's got nothing to do with it. You know as well as I do that when a plane takes off, they're either going to land or they all die. But the real story is in countless flights over this country for decades. The last time, we've never crashed a plane into a building for a long time, except for 9/11.
All right, Robert, thank you for your call, sir. I appreciate it very much. 877-876-PHIL. That doesn't mean anything, man. Who cares about that? Here is Dawn in Houston, Texas. Go ahead, Dawn. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
It doesn't mean anything.
Who cares, man? Go ahead.
Have you ever been told that a family member was killed in a plane crash?
Have I been told that a family member of mine was killed in a plane crash?
Have you ever been told?
But a joke, yeah. Somebody was joking.
Okay, well,
What do you mean joking?
Yeah, they told me your mother died in a plane crash, and I was devastated. Then they told me it was just a joke.
Okay, well, I've actually received the news before in 2000, before 9/11 happened. My grandfather was killed in a plane crash, and it was devastating to our whole entire family. And
I know what you mean. It was devastating to me.
What do you mean it was devastating to you?
When they told, I didn't know they were kidding, though.
And it took a It took a lot for me to go back on a plane. Not because they told the news that there was a plane crash, but because I had that emotional scar that my only grandfather that I have left in this world died in a plane crash.
That's what I'm talking about right there, Don. Thank you. When you were told that news about that plane crash, you said, that's it, I'll never fly again. Why does that happen? What?
No, I'm happy it was on the news. This stuff needs to be out there so that people understand.
But you, look what happened to you. You didn't want to fly. And that's one more nail in the coffin of the airline industry.
So how is this?
We could have called you up individually and said to you, Don, your grandfather has passed on. That's really all you need to know.
You know, I like it better knowing on the news or knowing that a family member is going to tell me.
Why would you want to know that? Why won't you let the airline call you up and say, Don, your grandfather is dead. You don't need to know how. He's dead. That way, you don't go.
He could have
said that again.
But no, it was a plane crash.
Right.
And I wanted to know. And I wanted everyone to know that that plane.
Why did you want to know that?
What? You know what? I can't hear. Your phone call is a little squirrely there, Don, but I would say, I wanted to ask Art, why can't this girl know that her grandfather died in a plane crash?
Because she doesn't want to fly anymore as a result of that. If she just found out that her grandfather had died, she would be sad, and she would grieve him, but she'd still fly.
So you're telling me that the airline should have called her up and said, by the way, your grandfather has died?
Yes.
But don't tell her how.
No, I would not.
Even though it's the airline calling.
Well, I would ask the lady. Dawn, are you there?
He said, hey, Dawn, your grandpa died. He choked on a pretzel.
No, I would leave that up to the medical examiner. And
you would leave that up to the medical examiner, whether a plane crash or a pretzel.
My question is for you. No, but my question for you is, why do you need to know how right away? Right away, I mean, not... You know, can't we wait a few days? Because the shock of that keeps you from flying to go find out what happened to him.
The shock didn't keep me from flying. It was that emotional going, oh, my gosh, you know, the last time my grandfather stepped anywhere, he was stepping onto a plane. I fly all the time now. It's not that I'm worried I'm going to crash because I know it could happen. It could happen. Getting in my car every day going to work, I could crash.
Right. But you did say that they kept you from flying for a while, didn't you?
I said it me for a little bit to get on a plane, but not because the media said, oh, there was a plane crash. It had nothing to do with the media telling me. It was my own personal demon.
It was your own personal demon that was telling you your grandfather died in a plane crash. Your grandfather died in a plane crash. It should have just been your grandfather has died. The details of that we will tell you, you know, in due course.
What kind of ridiculous thing is that? People want to know when a loved one dies, how did it happen? They're in a state of shock. They have questions.
All right, and meanwhile, an entire industry goes down the toilet because you just have to know, Mr. Henry, right away the details of everything, don't you? I mean, this is the ghoulish aspect of the media, and we're trying to keep Amtrak, if you'll pardon the pun, from running us out of town on a rail.
You know what, Don? My condolences for the loss of your grandfather. I know it's been many years, but I know that that can hurt for a long time. Thank you for your call.
Thank you very much. Y'all have a good night.
All right, Don. Bye-bye. 877-876-PHIL.
Are you trying to make me look bad because of the way you said that? And
I'm not trying to make you look bad, no, but I'm saying I think we need to respect her feelings.
Yeah, I wanted to say that to her, but you hung up on her.
No, you're saying to her, though, Art, we don't need to tell you how your grandfather died. Just it's enough to know that he died.
I'm trying to save the airline industry from being turned into melting down all these Boeings into cabooses, boxcars. I don't understand.
You really think that Amtrak's got it in, huh? That they really want to run you guys out of business?
Of course they do. And you guys can't wait to help them. Every time a plane crashes, oh, a plane crash, 300 people are dead. You mean the ones in the plane? Yes, we know that. Phil, that goes without saying. And I think that's the thing that your audience needs to understand, that their intelligence is being insulted. When you say that a plane has crashed, 300 people died, you're insulting the intelligence of the audience. They know full well a lot of people died. A plane crashed. But you got to say it anyway. And the reason why you got to say it is because I think, and I don't mean you necessarily, but the radio industry and the media, they get their thrills that way. That's how they get their kicks. 300 people, 400 people dead. Meanwhile, Amtrak is sitting over there with their little conductor hats on, and you know, doing all their stuff. And we don't sell a ticket. We can't sell a ticket to a Saturday night raffle. So I would suggest you think about that.
Yeah, well, you know what? You've said a lot there. 877, a woo-woo. That reminds me, anybody old enough to remember the Good and Plenty commercials? Anyway, 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Art Griego here as we talk about air turbulence, air travel, the air industry, the airline industry, and the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Wasn't that funny? What was so funny about that?
You going woo-woo, man.
Forget it.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. You know, we didn't do our affiliate spotlight tonight, but I think we, do we have time to do our... Ooh, man, I don't know what happened to our affiliate spot. Oh, where is it, Jason? Oh, yeah, tonight, KNEW, as fate would have it, we've been getting a lot of calls from San Francisco. KNEW San Francisco, our San Francisco Bay Area affiliate. And in Klamath Falls, Oregon, KFLS 1450 AM. Great stations on the Phil Hendry Network. Art Griego finishing up with me. You mentioned that John Madden, the National Football League broadcaster on Fox, is not thought of very well in the airline industry. Why is that?
I think you know, and I think most people know, that he does not fly. He advertises, and the Fox television network gives him free advertising every week. That he is in something called a Madden Cruiser, which is a recreational vehicle of some kind. And every week when they show John Madden in that Madden Cruiser, it is a weekly advertisement for how
the airline industry does not have the confidence of John Madden and Fox Television. And I think it is a terrible thing that they do, talking you know, about how John Madden has this wonderful way of traveling, and he always has the turkey on Thanksgiving. And we're here in the airline industry trying to stay afloat. Every plane crash, every bit of turbulence, everything that goes wrong is reported and reported with relish. And a young lady's grandfather dies. There's nothing wrong with having the airline industry inform the family your grandfather has died. You don't have to get into the details right away.
And if you got an airline calling someone up to say that their grandfather has passed on, how do you say that?
Well, I don't understand. What do you mean, how do you say that?
Well, how do you say to someone whose grandfather died, if you're an airline, okay?
Let me, you can call, if you want to do a little bit of psychodrama, Phil.
All right, let's see, if you're the guy answering the phone?
No, I would be the one calling.
All right. Hello?
You want?
Tell me how you would do it as an airline representative.
All right. Hello, is this Mr. Henry?
Yes, it is.
My name is Art Griego, and I'm with Griego Airlines.
Yes, sir.
I am very, very sad to inform you that your grandfather has passed on.
My grandfather passed on while he was flying to Miami today.
Yes, sir. I understand that that's what your understanding is. And
my understanding is, no, that's what his ticket said. He was flying on Griego Airlines to Miami.
He has passed on, sir.
Well, how did he die?
That's something that I think is going to be, you and I can sit down, and we're going to talk about that.
Did he die in a plane crash?
Sir, I think right now your emotional state is such that he died, and I want you to wrap your head around that. And
you're an airline official, and you're telling me to wrap my head around what?
I'm saying your grandfather died. Thank you very much. Goodbye, click. And then I would have hung up by now.
And so, in other words, 8778, I don't even know if we have time for a phone call. Let me go over here to Jack. Jack, you got 40 seconds. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, my gosh, don't stop me, but this is the craziest thing I've ever heard. Why do we report on air crashes? Because we report when people die, whether they're in gang-related shootings, whether they're in car pileups on the interstate, whether they die in a fire in a house. Oh, my gosh. You start covering up why people die on airplanes, I'm really going to stop flying because I won't know whether they're safe or not. They have 10,000 flights with not a problem and one with a problem, and this guy wants to cover it up. I'll tell you what, if there's many more people like him in the airline industry, I'm going to stop flying and ride Amtrak just to stay away from people like Art. This is ludicrous.
So you want to know about more air crashes and more air crashes and more air crashes?
Phil Hendry.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
They asked me to resign, and in fact, they harassed me.
It was heartbreaking, not only to see Lindsay in that position, but my daughter Allie took it quite.
You need to say a lot to assuage my
being surprised, and at the same time, happy to have a new benefit.
Say that again, Joy. I didn't hear you.
You're stupid.
All right. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. It's a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. I'm going to do it, okay?
Yeah, do it on a donkey.
Phil Hendry along with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard here in our open news hour. I'm going to do your donkey story. God.
Yeah, but you didn't see it, man.
I see the picture. There's a donkey with a parachute.
How come you don't like that, man?
I don't know, man. I don't find that funny. You guys think it's hysterical.
I mean, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, a donkey on a parachute is funnier than hell.
It's an animal being abused. I see an animal that's frightened to death, and I just don't find it funny.
You don't tell that WKRP when a turkey went flying, right?
Yeah, I've seen that one. That's funnier than hell. That may be the funniest thing that had ever been.
The funniest thing that ever been, what do you mean, on TV?
Maybe have ever been anything.
The fact that on WKRP in Cincinnati, the old TV show, they pushed turkeys out of a helicopter that couldn't fly, that's the funniest thing ever.
It's pretty classic.
You look it up, man. Everybody knows about it.
Yeah, I know it's a very famous episode. I personally, I don't know. I don't, call me weird, okay?
Man, there's a lot of people are going to go, why don't you take the pole out of your butt portion?
And why don't you shut up about poles, okay? I'll do your donkey story. Boy, Bud.
Yeah.
What?
Sounds like, hey, Bud wants to hear the donkey story. Woo!
I'm not talking about donkey show.
I wasn't either, but thank you very much for just broadcasting that. Anyway, parachuting donkey shocks Russian beachgoers. Well, I'm glad it shocked them. Here's some jagged jackass. Russian beachgoers got a shock when they saw a donkey soaring in the blue skies over the balmy beaches on the Sea of Azov in southern Russia last week, according to Politsia. Attached to a parachute, the animal screamed in fear for nearly 30 minutes. That's just the poor little donkey.
Oh, get out of here. No donkey knows about being afraid and everything.
I don't know, man. It's just the poor animal is up in the air. And this jackass. Anyway, attached to a parachute, the animal screamed in fear as it circled over the heads of holidaymakers sunbathing on a beach in the Cossack village of Golubutskaya. What do you mean, Cossack village? There ain't been no Cossacks around there in hundreds of years. Or 100 years. And this is in the Krasnodar region, in case you're checking it on a map.
I'll go look it up.
Yeah, you do that, man. A regional police spokeswoman said the donkey ended up in the skies as a result of an impromptu advertising campaign by several Russian entrepreneurs to attract beachgoers to their private beach. Russian entrepreneurs. Instead, they attracted the attention of regional police who learned of the flying donkey earlier this week and launched a probe. The donkey screamed and children cried, according to regional police spokeswoman Larisa Tuchkova. No one had the brains to call the police. Really? Well, in any event, let's listen here as Kimberly Wells, an advisor with the Brook, a UK-based charity that helps working horses, donkeys, and mules, talks to the RTTV network about this animal abuse case there in Russia.
The animal went through quite a horrific event. I mean, donkeys are meant to be staying on land, and what we did see was an animal parasailing into the sky, landing in water, and being taken up to land, which is, you know, put the animal through a great deal of fear, distress, and potentially pain. This animal was suffering was captured on videos and photographs, and the way it spread through the media is really amazing. And I think what the public has done is create a demand, you know, for animals to be treated better and for people to pay attention.
Well, now this is Russia, and even this news story from AFP said that even in Russia, a country that is known for animal cruelty, or at least where it is widespread, even there it came as a shock to the locals, according to the Tavern newspaper editor Elena Lovleva.
What's her name? Lovleva?
Yeah.
No, it ain't Lovleva. Elena Lovleva. I don't know how to pronounce that.
No, it's Lovleva. Love lever.
Yeah, man, why don't you grab on that?
Will you guys shut up with... Anyway, this has never happened before, she told AFP. Yeah, right.
Probably happens all the time.
They've got donkeys flying through the air over there, man. It's about time somebody did something about it.
They probably got, like, that Donkey Express.
Donkey Express?
You like a Spaz Express.
Anyway, the footage of the parachuting donkey was aired on national television on Tuesday, and the people were flipping out, and the peach girl, now this one cop, this whatever the hell her name is, the regional police spokeswoman, she said nobody had the brains to call the police. Well, I don't know. That must be a story within a story. I love how they talk about people over there, huh? You think a cop over here could, well, yeah, he could. If he was pissed off enough, yes, he could. But that just goes to show you. You know, what's going on in the world around here? You know, I mean, here is the United States, and we're used to things being done a certain way. And we think that this is kind of the way it is everywhere. No, it ain't, man. It's the rest of the world is psycho. It's freaking psycho, you know.
Well, I would... You think they got, a donkeys all over the place over there?
What do you mean, donkeys all over the place? Flying donkeys? I don't know. I bet you they've got a... You just saw... I just said it to you. This is a country where animal cruelty is widespread. Russia.
Yeah, but you gotta understand something, man. A Russian, man, they all, you know, like surf, and fuel and all that.
I know about that.
What do you mean they surf?
Not surf, S-E-R-F.
A serf. It's a feudal type, not a slave. Serfs were part of a feudal society. You don't even know what that is, do you?
Well, no. Not necessarily I do.
You don't know what a feudal society is, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay. A feudal society was the way Europe lived and much of the world lived many hundreds of years ago. And in a feudal society, the owner of the land, which could be a squire or a baron or some jazz like that, you know?
Well, I'm not familiar.
In any event, the people that worked on that land that were able to grow crops and eat some of those crops, but also they had to give most of it to the cat that owned the land, the baron or the squire or the knight or the whatever the hell the guy was.
Yeah.
They're called serfs.
Like my mom's talk about Bennett serf.
No, man, are you trying to be funny or something?
What do you mean Bennett surf?
I don't know.
Bud, shut up. This has got nothing to do with Bennett surf or surfing. I'm talking about S-E-R-F surfs. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, if you look on the, go on a Wikipedia, man, I'll tell you all about it.
I'll go over there.
Well, you go to Wikipedia, but go find something better than Wikipedia, man. Anyway, these are people who were like slaves, man, and every generation... if you were born on that land, that's where you lived and that's where you died. That was your life. That was life in medieval Europe. And that was life in Russia up until the Russian Revolution. I mean, up until the early part of the 20th century, that's how people were living. So you can imagine a country that's not that far removed from feudalism. And Germany was the same way. That's why these countries had a very, very difficult transition to democracy. That was very hard for the people of Russia, as well as Germany, to even begin to grasp the idea of, what I'm doing what now? You're going to vote, we're going to have candidates, and, you know, no, it doesn't work? No. No, it doesn't work. So they had to almost transition through a period of intense totalitarian leadership before they could grasp this whole democracy thing. Now they grasp it, and now getting this whole animal cruelty thing down, and can you imagine if Russia had a, it was a multiracial society like this one? That would be a whole thing. And then, like, women's rights, man, they got a long way to go, Jim.
You are trying to say they're, like, not as good as we is. I mean, I don't disagree.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. They're not as good as we are. I'm not saying the people are... Just the society they have is not as cool as ours.
Except, I just think it looks cool, that's all.
Well, you know what, Bud? If you want to go to a world where there's flying donkeys, then Russia's for you. 877-876-PHIL. Lindsay Lohan is going to go into jail for 14 days. Wesley Snipes is going to prison for 35 months. And the young lady, the lesbian, is getting $35,000 in Alabama from the prom. And we'll have all of that coming up for you. Our number 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL and philhendryshow.com. We'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
I'm going to see a flying donkey.
Phil Hendry.
Hey, after the show, go on over to our website, philhendryshow.com. We always post a show log there on what we did on the show. And then tomorrow you can download the audio. And you can also watch on demand our video if you missed most of it tonight, as well as a we'll update you on forthcoming podcasts that we're going to be doing on iTunes. Now, the big story really is it continues to be Mel Gibson, as far as I'm concerned, because I don't Lindsay Lohan. This poor kid, you know, just go in, get well. But this Mel Gibson story is fascinating, not necessarily because I think he's crazy, although perhaps, and certainly sounds crazy. And it's not because I'm against this young lady, this Miss Grigoriva. What I find interesting about this story is that Radar Online is getting these tapes. RadarOnline.com. Ever heard of them? Well, you do now. You've heard of TMZ, right? Well, guess who's getting aced out of this story? Guess who's taking it up the giggy with a Wawa brush?
Yeah, TMZ, Harvey Levin's getting in it in his giggy.
Nice one, man.
Well, he is.
It's true. TMZ, that used to be the big entertainment site, they're taking it in the shorts big on this story, man. Somebody has been leaking these tapes to Radar Online. Now, is it Grigoriva? Is it somebody in her camp? Did someone say this is the best way to prejudice this case against Mel Gibson, that if the public gets wind of this stuff, they will demand that this man be put in the stock and put out in the public square so we can throw rotten vegetables at him? What do they think people are going to think? How do they think this is going to favorably influence young Miss Grigoriva? Or was it just some gardener or a plumber or something that got a hold of him, or some guy that was, you know, redoing the jacuzzi and said, oh, look at these tapes. And he listened to him and he said, I'm going to sell these to Radar Online.
I think that's it, too.
You think so what?
I think probably a guy like that, you know.
Like a gardener, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. So Bud votes for gardener. What do you think, Robert?
I think that probably somebody like her lawyer, man, you know.
Her lawyer? I mean, that sounds a little, her lawyer, well, maybe.
Well, maybe not a lawyer, but public relations or something like that.
Lawyer, that's unethical. I think it was a gardener, or it could be a lawyer, but it's hard to fathom.
It's either the gardener or a lawyer, Bud says now.
Yeah, I noticed you're changing that.
I'm saying it could be a gardener, but it could be a lawyer, but that is very unethical.
For the gardener?
Well, for the gardener, yeah.
Are you listening to what you're saying, man?
Well, you asked me about it.
Yeah, man. Well, how do you feel about either a gardener or a lawyer?
What do you mean the gardener, man? How'd the gardener get it? I mean, maybe a maid.
Well, whoever gets to get in the house.
Well, a gardener ain't, man. That's the cat that mows the lawn.
Oh, all right. Well, then what's the one that is in the house?
Like a maid or something.
That one.
A gardener. Anyway, Radar Online show, slow leak of shocking Mel Gibson tapes continued today with a bombshell recording that the gossip site claimed in the headline could destroy Mel. Well, look, the dude's lost his agent. The cat is losing all kinds of goodwill with the public. But he's rich. Anyway, the latest snippet of tape is from yet another argument between Gibson and his ex-girlfriend, Oksana Grigoriva, and it appears to provide further evidence that the Braveheart actor was physically abusive, as Grigoriva has alleged. You hit me and you hit her. She's referring to the couple's nine-month-old daughter. You need medication. Let's listen now to Mel Gibson as he tells Oksana Grigoriva that no one will believe her claims. No one's going to believe your claims. That she says he hit her and the child.
Mel, you're imbalanced. There's something wrong with you. You need medication.
Shut up.
You cannot raise this child with this symptoms.
What?
You're acting as a crazy man right now. And you have been for many, many months. And you hit me and you hit her whilst she was in my hands. Mel, you're losing your mind. You need medication.
You need a kick up the ass. And I want my child, and no one will believe you. So, f*** you.
That's probably changing there, Mel. He just said, I want my child, and no one's going to believe you, so F you. I think that's probably out the window. Anyway, here Mel rails against Oksana for... Notice how we're calling him Mel. Here Mel rails against Oksana for hurting his masculinity.
And I'm not giving you my house, and you can rot unless you crawl back, suck my... and say you're sorry in that order. Do you understand me? You offend my maleness, my masculinity, my being, my soul. And you call me a sinner. You're a moving violation. If you get raped, it's your fault for showing up your fake like they're some special deal.
Are you crazy?
How much do they cost those fakers?
Are you crazy?
You complain about mastitis? They're fake, baby. Come on, you got little bladders in there. You think I'm an idiot?
Here, Oksana says Mel was born with some chemical imbalance, making him insane.
You need to say a lot to assuage my insanity because you made me this way.
I didn't make you this way.
Did so.
You were born this way. And you yell and scream and threaten everybody around you. Everybody's pussyfitting around you because they're all scared out of you. But you pay...
A bunch of using like you. You're like every other...
You you're paying them money, and they will never tell you the truth. They will never tell you the truth, who you are, because you're paying them money, inclusive of your psychiatrist, who should send you to a neurologist because you are imbalanced and you need medication, and he's just taking your money.
Well, this chick is pretty smart, man.
I was going to say, she knows a lot about it.
Well, what does she mean?
She's saying he's got a chemical imbalance. It's very, very possible if a cat just is, like, over the line like that, you know? Who's his psychiatrist? I want to find out, okay? Bud?
Yeah, I'll look it up right now.
And Robert, never mind. Anyway, Mel just wants to be thanked. That's what he says to her in this final clip.
You never even say thank you.
Yes, I have many times.
They say thank you every 5 damn minutes. And not call me mean. And not look at me sideways. Just suck my Dad, you boy, that's all you're good for. That's about all you're good at. That's better than music. You there?
Yeah, he's pretty whack, man. As you heard her say, you hit me, you hit our child. Mel, you're losing mind. You need medication. She says to Gibson on nearly the five-minute recording during which she repeatedly questions his mental state. While it has not been independently verified that the voices on the tapes are Gibson and Grigoriva, a spokesperson for the actor has not denied that his client is heard breathlessly screaming obscenities and hurling racial and sexist epithets at his ex on the recordings. Gibson has not made a statement on the tapes, and his spokesperson has offered a no comment. It's pretty crazy stuff, man. I'd love to find out who his doctor is, because you know what? She's not too far off.
Yeah, you know, another thing that you were saying like the other day, too.
Yeah, you tell people what you said about it.
She's a Russian, man, Mel. She's a Russian, and Russians never give up. Russians never give up.
Yeah, this is bitching.
Well, I mean, it's not bitching. She's a Russian. And that means they keep coming at you, man. They dig in. They dig into the snow. They wait out the winter. And the next thing you know, they're going to have you encircled and you're going to die, man. You're going to be dying, laying there in the blood-soaked snow. You know, seriously, the Russian people, they are hardy. You know, we talk about hardy and tough. Now, I'm not saying that, wow, you know, if we looked at their, you know, DNA. But the fact they're a very hardy bunch of people, I wouldn't want to have some Russian chick coming after me.
Yeah, they'll never give up, man. Like that one guy I read about in the news that time. The Mad Monk. You know that guy?
Yeah, I read about him. What was his name? Sputin or Spumum?
Yeah, his name was Spumum. And,
what do you mean Spumum? You mean Rasputin?
Yeah, that's it, Rasputin.
Yeah, they never could kill that guy. They tried and tried yet again, man. And man, they never killed that guy.
Well, the thing about Rasputin was, yeah, that cat was really hard, man. I mean, he was hardcore. The name of the psychiatrist isn't known yet.
What about Rasputin? What did he do?
Rasputin was this monk that lived at the turn of the century. He was very, very tight with the royal family of Russia. He was a Greek Orthodox monk that came out of the Siberia. He was a peasant, but he had a very, very powerful pull on the empress. Empress Alexandra, because she had a sick son. This little boy was a hemophiliac. And so she was, I guess we're running out of time, huh?
Well, I want to know about Spumum.
His name ain't Spumum, it's Rasputin. We'll be back, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Spumata.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
I thought I would just flash back a little bit here. Here's one from Days of Yore.
Kick your f***ing ass! I want you off the f***ing set, you p***.
Sorry.
No, don't just be sorry. Think for one f***ing second. What the f*** are you doing? Are you professional or not?
Yes, I am.
Do I f***ing walk around and rip that? No, shut the f*** up, Bruce. Do I want? No! No! Don't shut me up!
I'm not shutting you up.
Am I gonna walk around and rip your f***ing lights down in the middle of a scene? Then why the f*** are you walking right through? Like this in the background. What the f*** is it with you? What don't you f***ing understand? You got any f***ing idea about, hey, it's
distracting having somebody walking up behind Bryce in the middle of the scene? Give me a answer. What don't you get about it?
That was Christian Bale. I forget when that was. Here's another piece of that.
Gee, you got something to say to this?
I didn't see it happen.
Well, somebody should be watching and keeping an eye on him.
Fair enough.
This is the second time that he doesn't give a about what is going on in front of the camera.
All right?
All right? I'm trying to do a scene here, and I'm going, why the Shane walking in there? What is he doing there? Do you understand my mind is not in the scene if you're doing that? Stay off the set, man. Right, let's go again.
And this is from February of 09.
Let's not take a minute. Let's go again. And let's not have you walking in.
All right, then.
I never had a DP behave like this. You don't understand what it's like working with actors. That's what that is.
No,
that's what that is, man. I'm telling you. I'm not asking. I'm telling you. You wouldn't have done that otherwise. I want to kick your ass. You don't
Christian,
shut up for
Christian,
a second, all right?
Okay,
I'm going to go. Do you want me to go trash
Christian,
your lights?
Christian.
Do you want me to trash them? Then why are you trashing my scene?
I'm not trying to trash
you. You are trashing my scene.
Christian,
you do it one more time, and I ain't walking on this set if you're still hired. I'm serious.
Wow.
You're a nice guy. You're a nice guy, but I don't cut it when you're like this on set.
Wow. All right. So, and then here's the last one.
Yeah, you might get it. He doesn't get it.
I get it.
You might.
I get it.
He does not get it.
And good adjustments.
Good adjustments.
Okay. For real.
Oh, yeah, that was one.
Get it.
No, I don't need any walking. He needs to stop walking.
I get that.
I ain't the one walking. Let's get Tom and put this back on. Let's go again. Seriously, man, you and me, we're done professionally.
Okay, great. So I was reminded of that. I was reminded of that when I was listening to...
And I'm not giving you my house, and you can rot!
All right. 877-876-PHIL, and frankly...
And you heard the tape they done.
Some guy, and it was very funny, some cat put together Gibson and Bales, and there you have it. There you have it, you know. The only thing about that Bales tape I keep hearing is, stop, Christian, stop, stop. Guys are trying to handle him, and then I remember that good adjustments line. I was... All right, now on to some good news. And the good news is they plugged that leak, that BP leak, man, so that's a beautiful thing. You know that, I know that, but guess what? Some jackass over at the Washington Post said that they doctored up a photo. Are you kidding me, man? There's two instances of some real stupid reporting. Every day we have an example of what we've often talked to you about, which is the desperation of certain elements in the media, given the fact that there is a media bloodletting going on. And the media bloodletting that is going on, essentially, is the stronger are consuming or destroying the weaker. That's happening right now in my industry. Broadcasting, internet, publishing, you know, all of these areas of communication, there is a cannibalizing, there is a tribal warfare taking place. There's a massacre and a slaughter on a scale that would be, it would be considered World War III were it being fought with real armaments. Newspapers are going belly up. Magazines are going out of business. Radio stations are losing business and going out of business. Broadcasting companies going out of business. Television is involved in this battle right now between these competing companies. Companies buying other companies, divesting themselves of other properties. And on the internet, of course, we just gave an example, Radar Online, TMZ, you know, everybody's trying to position themselves for the next big push. Companies like the Washington Post, companies like the New York Times, companies like the Los Angeles Times, these are all companies that are in rallying, you know, varying degrees of health. LA Times not doing so good. I shouldn't say, but I can't imagine they're doing very well. I mean, they got nothing, man. They offer nothing. They don't even have a legacy over there that anybody can grab a hold of. And even the common man could say, oh, wow, the LA Times, I remember them from this and that. The Washington Post, everybody knows them as the Watergate newspaper. The New York Times is the New York Times. But when you got to start doing stuff like this, this is from a blog, and that's bad enough. Some jive ass by the name of John something or other, and he's got a blog called Your Mom or America Blog, something like that. Anyway, this jackball found two pictures of the monitors, the big telemonitors that are used by the BP technicians to monitor what's going on with the well. And apparently BP did some photo doctoring, not to cover up what was happening with the well, but to cover up the fact that they had some blank screens. So they did this. They moved the individuals in the photograph in such a way so as that they would cover up a blank screen. Or they would insert into the blank screen something that was that looked like it wasn't, you know, looked like there was some action going on. The point being, it was not a major cover-up of something horrific that was going on. It was simply the doctoring of a photograph so that they were not releasing something that looked, you know, empty. This is not Watergate. It's not Contragate. It ain't Irangate. It ain't Travelgate. It ain't Whitewater. It ain't nothing. It ain't no kind of gate, man. And we're living in a day and age right now where every kind of, every jive ass who's got a blog, every jackball who's trying to keep his job at a newspaper is looking for the next gate. Well, there ain't no gate, man. Not yet. Not any of you guys are going to find, that's for sure. I don't think there's a guy out there right now writing a blog. I don't think there's a guy out there right now reporting for a newspaper. I don't think there ain't a man among you who's got what it takes to uncover the next gate. Not when you guys are running around chasing crap like BP doctoring photos. And the thing that kills me, and it's very unfortunate, that was like one of the top stories today.
I don't even know what you're talking about. I didn't even hear about it.
I showed you the picture, right?
Yeah, it's all that, yeah.
All right, that's one. Now, the other one is this story about Shirley Sherrod. I can't for love or money figure this one out, honest to God. Now, I know that there are a lot of people who are involved in politics to the point of a sexual turn-on. There are people who love their political allegiances more than they love their own wives and kids. There are people who are involved in different aspects of these different political movements. They're like addicts, you know. I'll tell you, the funniest thing in the world is to go on a website, like I did the other day, and it was a conservative website, but this could equally be true of liberals. And it was called Three Things You Should Know About Islam, and it was posted by a conservative. One of the first things that's said on this tape is that people only read and listen to news that they are comfortable with because it makes them feel good and it helps reinforce their worldview. And I was thinking, the people that posted this, are they watching it? Because it speaks just as clearly of them as it does of anybody else. All right, here's the next story. NAACP snookered over video of former USDA employee who says White House forced her to resign. Now, this is a very, very simple story that was screwed up by Fox, by Breitbart, and maybe to some extent by the NAACP. But this stuff gets so soaked in ideology, you don't know what the hell's going on. So you need somebody who's going to explain it to you. And here it is. I'll lay this on you as clearly as I can, and I ain't lying, man. You can listen to this stuff. But people, I'll say it again. You know that the news anchor's lying to you. You know that. That goes without saying that the news anchor is lying to you. That the broadcaster is lying to you. You should know that. You should understand that. You talk about politicians lying to you. And everybody likes to talk about politicians lying, but I don't hear anybody saying, well, it's obvious to me that it's television, it's entertainment, they must be lying, because that's what's going on. Now, here's the story here about this charade. What happened was the woman was giving a talk, and this was in 1986. And she was telling the story of a farmer that she was helping when she was working in that aspect of public life. She was assisting a white farmer. And she talked about how this man, because he was a white man, she decided that she would just go ahead and get this guy a white lawyer. Because she figured that this guy was kind of lording it over her. That this guy was a white guy who was sort of lording it over her and wasn't going to pay her any mind anyway. And that she was, you know, not being treated well by him. But she figured out through the course of her relationship with this guy that it wasn't about his race. It was about the fact that he was a farmer, that he was trying to save his farm. And she got to know the man, and she got to know the woman, and she got to know the people, and she realized that, geez, you know, these people are worth working for. They're worth saving. And she went out, and she found another lawyer when this white lawyer wasn't doing the job. And she got these people to a point where they could save their farm. And she said in the course of this talk, I recognized that this was not about race, it was about class. Which I said during our pre-show, if that ain't the truth. Now, Breitbart, and I don't think much of Breitbart.com. Breitbart decides that this is an example of racism in the NAACP because she was giving this talk to the NAACP. She wasn't talking about being a racist against whites. She was talking about being a racist against whites and growing out of it when she got to know the people and the plight that they were involved in. It was almost like the story of, on a much smaller scale, the story of Malcolm X, who at one time was a black nationalist, separatist, white devil kind of a guy until he recognized that there were Muslims who were as blue-eyed and blonde-haired as any white man he'd ever seen. And he realized that he had to reassess everything he'd ever known about white people. Here in the video that set off this controversy, Sherrod is heard saying she didn't help a white farmer as best as she could because there were black farmers in need of help. The quality of this audio is less than optimal, but we will try here. Now, unfortunately, that's all of this meeting that I've got. She went on to say that she got to know this man, and she decided she would help this man, and she would do her best for this man, because it was as she got to know him, she learned more about him. This was the process. Breitbart.com doesn't want to report that. Breitbart.com wants to say that this is a racist example of racism at an NAACP meeting. That's Breitbart. Fox, Bill O'Reilly, he doesn't want to report that because, well, it wouldn't work with Bill O'Reilly. He's got to report there's racism at the NAACP. Well, there wasn't any racism at the NAACP. The woman told a story that Breitbart didn't feel like we're telling you about. The NAACP claimed late today they were snookered by deceitful editing and that Sherrod's comments were out of context. Sherrod was mistaken to think in terms of just race, she said, instead of an in terms of poor versus rich. Now, the people at Breitbart aired this piece of tape too, but then because they're stupid, they said this was an example of racism. So, unfortunately, the story is this. Breitbart.com decided that this was an example of racism in the NAACP and reported it as such, even though after they got called on it by the NAACP, they decided to say, oh, well, here's an example of her saying, yes, I was educated by this experience and I learned to treat people better. Bill O'Reilly, he lies because he's on Fox, and CNN lies too. I don't even watch those two channels anymore because there's no truth coming from them anymore. I mean, there's not even a semblance of truth coming from them anymore. Fox and CNN both. But now Breitbart is involved in this, and I think it's because Breitbart, you know, Matt Drudge was Breitbart's boss. Breitbart hit the ball out of the park a couple times in a couple of stories, and now he thinks he's making news with this drivel. Same thing with his cat was going to bat for that punk that was trying to tap the phones of those people in Louisiana, whoever that jackass was, that guy that did the Acorn film, which was fine. That was okay. But then he goes and he tries to create news by busting into somebody's office and tapping the phone. I don't know what the hell that guy was doing. All I know is this. Anybody heard from him lately? No. I would suggest to you, Andrew, you're a nice guy. Be a little clearer, man, as to what it is you think you're doing. Are you here to report the news? Are you pushing the conservative agenda? I mean, I got no problem with that, man. Just tell me what it is you're trying to do, all right? And that way I can either work my way around or through your stuff. If you're telling me that the NAACP is racist, and you give me an example of that by showing a woman who said she admitted herself she was being racist and she learned from her experience, that's not racism. That's a woman talking about a story of self-education, self-awareness. Oh, all right, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, here's another poll for you. This is from the Daily Beast, the 10 gayest cities in America.
Uh-oh.
Take it easy, bud. The U.S. metropolitan region... What is going on with my microphone here tonight? Testing 1, 2, 3. Man, I got to pot this thing all the way up. What the hell is with this?
Yeah, let me try it.
Don't touch any of the knobs, man. Don't do it. The U.S. metropolitan region with the largest concentration of gay and lesbian people is San Francisco. Well, no kidding. That's not exactly news, but there are more than a few surprises in the Gay Lesbian Index's metro area rankings. This was developed by Gary Gates, a demographer at UCLA's Williams Institute. The Gay Lesbian Index value tells you how the proportion of same-sex couples among all households of a given metro area compares to the average for the entire United States. An index value of 2, for example, means that the proportion of same-sex couples in that area is twice that of the nation. Well, we're going to forego all of that horse dung. The idea that actually, it's pretty easy to understand. It's the same-sex couples per 1,000, 12.4 in San Francisco, is twice that of the nation. So in San Francisco, it's 12 times that of the nation. The next most gay city in America, we took a few calls from folks in Santa Rosa, Petaluma, California, and they have 7 times as many gay couples as they do in the rest of the country. Portland and South Portland, Maine, and that is where our affiliate WZAN is. Same-sex couples, 7.4.
Is that why the Sopranos had that one fat guy go there?
The Sopranos had the fat guy,
Yeah, Vito.
Oh, yeah, Vito. Oh, did Vito meet that guy there?
Yeah, I think so. Vito, when they found out he was gay, he took off and moved to an antique store.
Well, he didn't move to the antique store. He was in the antique store.
Well, I would be in the antique store is where I found out that, yeah, he's home. That's a good place for him. And then the next day, he met that guy.
I thought he moved in there.
He didn't move into an antique store. That was a bed and breakfast he moved into.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was Vito, and he was gay, and poor Vito. Vito got killed by the guys because he was gay. But, yeah, and he met that guy up in New England someplace. Boston boasts, so that's that was Portland, South Portland in Maine, WZAN. One more town in Boston, WTKK is our affiliate there. Same-sex couples per 1,000 households, almost 7 per the national average. Boston boasts the largest lesbian community nationwide. 60% of the city's same-sex couples are women. And the number 5 is Seattle. Cairo Radio, same-sex couples per household, 6.7. There you have it. World-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Jason Rantz. What are you looking at?
Is that, you're just going to leave people hanging that way with all the gay areas?
Yeah, it's produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Charles Wagon, and our screener was Dan Northcraft.
Phil.
Bye.
Hendry.